Hello and welcome back to the Just Interesting podcast, episode number 157, I believe. And what an auspicious number. It is the magic number. It is the number of space exploration. Don't ask me why, but it is, because today we are talking about Polaris Dawn, an epic-sounding name for an epic-sounding event that may or may not have really happened. I'm Robin, and I'm joined by Alex and Martin. Alex and Martin, nice to have you back. It's been a while. It's been far too long. I hope you're both well.
Oh, it's been so long, Robin. Yes. So glad to be back. 157. Come on, we've got to think of a reason. What is the connection between that and space?
What's the connection?
157 astronauts that have been to space, maybe? Do you think there's been more than that? Or is that...
Now that you raise it, that's a statistic we should look into. Yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be more.
There were 12 men have landed on the moon, allegedly. No, they have, though, haven't they? They have.
setting out the stall early, Alex.
Setting out my stall early. I'm in the pro. This did happen, camp. So you've got to convince me, Robin. Convince me that this is fake.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, let's start strong with an interesting fact. As of February 2024.
I was about to read this one out.
Oh, Martin, go ahead.
No, please do.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
No, I only get it wrong.
No, you won't. No, you won't.
Okay. As Robin was saying, no, please do. I can't just take that off you. Go on.
Okay. Well, we're reading exactly the same Wikipedia page, I imagine.
Ready? 3, 2, 1.
644 people have reached the altitude of space, according to
the definition
of the boundary of space from the FAI. But 681 people have reached space, according to USAF, and 610 have reached Earth orbit. But that number has now gone up, according to SpaceX. Or has it?
Ooh. Imagine if you were one of those who is between the 644 and 681.
Yeah.
One of those, you're like...
Sucks to be you.
So have I made it to space or not? No, I have. You'd be arguing at the pub. You'd be like, so it's my mate Jack, he's been to space. He'd be like... Well, according actually to the USAF, yes.
Well, it's because of different definitions of the Kármán line, isn't it? Which is, I think, 100 kilometers or 90 kilometers up is the boundary line between space, but it kind of varies. So I think if you go on Jeff Bezos's rocket penis, then you do cross both versions of the Kármán line just for like a couple of minutes. Whereas if you go on Richard Branson's space penis, then you don't technically cross both Kármán lines, like as in both definitions of where it is, the boundary.
Yeah,
space.
That's not a surprise, is it? What a surprise that Richard Branson's outfit should be the one that doesn't actually deliver.
His is slightly smaller than Jeff Bezos's.
Well, we shall be discussing whether or not the Polaris Dawn extravehicular activity by a private citizen, not a trained, employed astronaut, last week was actually real, and whether it was faked, and whether that live stream footage we see, whether all of it was just an elaborate hoax by none other than the Musk himself. And after that, we shall be responding to your comments, our favourite comments comments we want to respond to from previous episodes of the podcast. And before that...
Interesting distinction.
Before we get to that, of course, we shall be sharing our facts, things we've learned this week. So, fellas, let's get straight into the facts of things we've learned this week. Martin, what have you learned this week?
Well, I learned a little bit about an old Russian. An old Russian by the name of Peter the Great.
Oh, yeah.
How much do you know about Peter the Great?
He was late
17th into 18th century.
Was he better than Alexander?
By all means, maybe. Although, you know, we'll find out based on your thoughts on facial hair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, Peter Romanov, we're talking, as I say, the late 17th century here. So, late 1600s. And he wanted to modernize Russia. And he thought, okay, well, you know, I've taken a tour of Western Europe, and I've looked around the universities in the UK. I've looked at Oxford University, the Dutch Naval Yard, And the one thing I'm seeing here about these modern societies is the fact that people don't have facial hair. And so when I go back to Russia, well, what will I want to do? Well, I want to remove facial hair from first my subjects and friends. So there was a reception when Peter came back from Western Europe in 1698. And everyone was like, oh, welcome back. Fantastic. You know, great to have you back, Peter. And what he did, the first thing he did was he said, thank you very much, pulled out a big barber's knife, you know, cutthroat razor, and started going around to his friends who were welcoming him back and shaving off their beards with his own hands.
Wow.
And of course, he's Peter, isn't he? He is Peter the Great. So no one's going to say, can you stop what you're doing? Partly because he's Peter the Great, and also because he was 6'8". So everyone's like, well, he's going to absolutely crush me with his bare hands if I... He's got a razor in his hands as well, so best not. Of course, people at the time, you know, Orthodox Russian Christians thought that this was like blasphemous, cutting off people's beards at this time. So I think
it's not great, isn't it? I'm not an Orthodox Christian, but I'd be against that as well, to be fair. Yeah.
So, you know, Ivan the Terrible apparently said, shaving the beard is a sin the blood of all martyrs will not wash away. So he went pretty hard on the shaving of beards. So instead of this, Peter thought, okay, well, it's not that popular amongst my friends. I'm losing friends here fast. And so instead he implemented a beard tax. So people who were poor in society, the poorest in society, had to pay a very small amount of money, whereas well-off people had to pay as much as 100 rubles, which I have no idea really how much that is, but apparently it was a lot for the time.
I imagine it was quite a lot for the time, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so there was this tax, and in fact, the tax was pretty unpopular, but it remained in place until 47 years after Peter's death.
Wow.
Until 1772.
They honored it for a little bit. They were just scared he was going to come back as a ghost with a cutthroat razor.
Yeah, exactly.
Shave everyone's beards off. I do like the thought that that's how he was trying to deal with this before the beard tax came in. He was just wandering the streets on his own with a razor, just going like, oh, it's taking forever. And it keeps growing back.
I know, awful. I'm going to go to my subjects again and again and shave their beards. Yeah. Just wanted to own a barbershop. That's the truth.
Fair enough.
Yeah, his calling was really barbary. That's not quite right.
He wandered around all of Western Europe. He saw some amazing, like, massive Gothic cathedrals and architecture, and you know, some wonders of the ancient and modern world. And then he was like, "They don't have beards. They don't have beards."
This is the common denominator. Yeah.
Well, that's
exactly.
Nice.
Would you both shave your beards if you had to pay a tax?
How much is the tax? Am I talking 100 rubles here?
We're talking 100 rubles.
How much is 100 rubles? 100 rubles is 84 pence, so I think I'll be all right.
I mean, let's convert it for inflation, right?
What, from 70? I mean, actually, that'd be tons, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Presumably quite a lot, yeah.
What's the amount you would need to get taxed for you to be like, okay, I am a clean shaven man from this point on? Like £100 a year?
A year?
You'd still pay a hundred quid a year to have a beard.
Yeah.
I suppose like for the shaving equipment, that would probably equal out, to be fair.
Yeah, and that'd be a fair amount.
You've got to be clean shaven.
Yeah. So 100 rubles. Oh, the inflation calculator doesn't go back to 1700. Shame.
This feels like it's leading into a sponsorship for like Philips OneBlade or something. But we're not sponsored by any kind of shaving companies.
No, we're not.
Not yet. But please do.
Please get in touch.
So, Alex, what did you learn this week?
So, have either of you ever wondered why, you know, the classic heart shape, like a Valentine's heart shape? Why is that shaped not like a heart, like an actual heart? I mean, that would be terrifying, I accept.
That's an interesting question.
But it looks nothing like a heart, does it?
That's a good point. I mean, I guess you've got the two sides to it. But yeah, no, it doesn't. No.
It just doesn't look like a heart.
No.
And there is some speculation where this comes from. And it's possible it's based on an ancient plant called silphium. And it's thought that this is the case because of some ancient Syrian silver coins depicting a leaf of this plant, which is shaped like that kind of classic iconography of a heart, you know, two sides. You know, like the heart shape, like a Valentine's Day heart shape.
Yeah.
Silver coins from 500-600 BC. This plant was also very effective as it was a medicinal plant and was used to treat many different ailments. And ancient Greeks and Romans used it also and predominantly as a contraceptive. And they used this so much, in fact, that by 200 BC, the plant was fully extinct. So there was this miracle. So basically what I've learned is that there was this miracle plant that was used for many different diseases and ailments and, you know, was a very effective contraceptive and created the or possibly created the iconography of the classic heart image. And it's the reason we can't have nice things is because our predecessors drove it to extinction.
Classic humans.
Thousands of years ago. Classic. However, I did also read an article from this year, July of this year, saying that this miracle plant in ancient Greece was recently rediscovered. Hey. Possibly.
Okay.
I think it's still early days whether this is actually true, but there's a picture of it. So, hopefully this is, and it looks like the...
What is it called again?
The images. Silphium. So S-I-L-P-H-I-U-M.
Martin's hoping to make a saving on prophylactics.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. The heart shape, yeah. Okay, cool.
But yeah, apparently there's just been one stalk that's been found.
One stalk. Why do they announce it? Why? Not when like there's only one stalk. At least start growing it again.
But in these days, though, when they say contraceptive, they really mean like it's basically a poison, so a killer baby if you end up having one.
I was about to ask, what kind of contraceptive? Is it really an abortive poison? Or is it something that you eat after? Like the pill, you take it every day and it has an effect?
Well,
is it more like a painful kind of, you need to shove this up every orifice of the male?
Well, honestly, I think since this plant, this is actually the case with this one very recently, you know, no one really knows because it hasn't been in existence for thousands of years. I think it was just, there's been lots of writing about it being used for that purpose, but I don't think there's anything specific like, need to take a massive stalk of it and shove it up your bum or anything like that. You know, there's... Nothing specific.
The way it works as a contraceptive is that after you've shoved it up your bum, you just don't feel like having sex.
It's just a very, very...
It just works.
...protracted way of abstinence, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's really interesting, Alex. And I love that kind of thing when you actually pause to think about why do we do things that particular way? Why is that the traditional way of doing things? And often the answer is, we don't know. But when you do have the answer, you often think, oh, wow, that's really kind of random how that came about. But fascinating.
Yeah.
Thank you. In fact, the fact I've got is kind of similar. So I happened to be in the Schokoladenmuseum in Köln, I think so I say it, Cologne, in Germany recently.
Just confuse everyone otherwise.
A little holiday. And I was learning, they've got a museum, in the museum they've got a little like potted history of the cocoa bean. And I feel bad because I should have thought about this. But apparently the cocoa bean was, they've got evidence of it being drunk as early as like 3000 BC or something like that. It goes back a long time. But the fact I actually learned, which is related to what you were saying, Alex, was that when chocolate became popular after the Spanish conquered South America and Central America and started bringing it to Europe, demand started to rise. And so some enterprising Spanish settlers thought, aha, we can make this into a business. And the natives, the Aztecs and the Mayans, were already farming. they weren't just going out into the jungle, the rainforest, and hacking off the cocoa beans from the trees. They were actually farming them. They had kind of plantations of cocoa trees, which I didn't realize they were doing that already. But for some reason, all the people with the skills and the know-how and the general labor force who were farming the cocoa beans, in the process of the Spanish conquest, they disappeared. These people just kind of so random. And they thought, oh no, so we're going to have to find another source of labor because we've killed everyone. So the solution to that was hop across the ocean to Africa and grab some slaves.
Yeah.
And thus the African slave trade was born in Central America.
Wow.
So now every time I eat chocolate, I'm like, well, now I feel dirty.
This is the reason. Yes. And that can be traced back as like the predominant reason for the Central America slave trade. They were already doing it,
but the whole triangle of the slave trade across the Atlantic was started because of cocoa beans, because of chocolate.
Well,
yeah. There you go.
Welcome to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, where we ruin things that you love.
Good.
And on that note, I can't eat chocolate ever again.
That's all right. Just go for the fair trade and anti-slavery brands. You'll be all right.
Yeah.
Your conscience will be clear. But yes, on that note, thank you to our sponsors, our lovely supporters, our Patreon supporters and YouTube members, who are wonderful people who continue to support us, especially through our recent low output, let's say that, as we've all been super busy. But thank you so much, especially to Amylicious, Cindy Hafner, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapia, Ahmad, Peaswood, Josh Chromatek, A Filthy Casual, Simon Workman, and Scott Joel, our wonderful gold and silver members who are just fantastic and go that extra mile to keep the lights on. Thank you so much to everybody who supports us, and thank you to everyone who just listens to us. And if you listen to us on a podcast platform or YouTube where you can give us a like and a review, please do. It's always great to have feedback, and it always really helps us algorithmically speaking.
No, thank you very much. We are very much aware that over the last few weeks and months, it's been a little bit light on the content front, and our apologies. But we're hopefully back into more of a rhythm now that the craziness has died down a little bit. Well, yes, some of it.
Yeah, the problem with summer. Little peek behind the scenes, everyone. Summer is crazy for all of us work-wise, and now I've added a baby to the mix. Martin's already got his large families that he looks after, and it's just...
Families? He's just got a nanny.
I like the way that you said that you've added a baby to the mix made me think we were doing a Three Men and a Baby type situation, and now
we've got to juggle a baby. That's an interesting podcast.
We're all involved in it somehow.
And on that note, fellas, you ready to discuss some conspiratorial news? About space. Polaris Dawn, Elon Musk's latest SpaceX ego trip, I was going to say, but he wasn't involved. He wasn't involved. Some other billionaires were involved. And this is historical because on September 10th, history was made. And the first spacewalk, or extravehicular activity, EVA, was performed in space by a private citizen who had paid for the privilege of going up there. And in fact, there were two people on this spacewalk. Jacob Isaacson, I think?
Isaacman.
Sarah Gillis, a man and a woman, which is in itself noteworthy because not many women have been on spacewalks. And I think she even played a tune when she was in space, and she played a bit of Rey's theme from Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and transmitted it back to Earth using SpaceX's Spacelink to test the ability to communicate through space.
I think they were testing their Starlink satellite network. And technically we should say as well, because the way this was the capsule the like opening to it. There wasn't like what would you call it? A sealed area, an airlock. They just kind of opened. So technically, all four of the members did the EVA.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah, technically, because they are all exposed to the vacuum of space.
So this is
just whether they went outside of the spacecraft.
This is SpaceX's.
Got out their seats and went up the ladder.
Now I'm all right.
I think this is the Dragon capsule, isn't it? This particular one is the Resistance. Not Resistance. Is it Resistance?
That sounds right. Not 100% sure on what the name of the capsule was.
This is the Resilience capsule, which NASA has used on a couple of missions before. So this one's been around. And that's the whole point of SpaceX. They make reusable spacecraft. So that's kind of exciting. But here's where we start getting into the conspiracies. There was a live stream, and there's footage, and it was streamed live. Lots of millions of people watched it. And as you might expect, almost immediately, people started saying, it's fake. It's fake. It's not real.
Of course.
Yeah. And setting aside the problem of distance, as in literal, you're watching something on TV, you are removed from being there. Can you trust your eyes? Even back in the 60s, when the moon landings were broadcast live to the Earth, people were not trusting of it. But this in particular had had some issues that people have highlighted. And one of them is that, Alex. Like, I think there's a general incredulity about the fact that you could have a capsule, and it was like the command module too. It's where they sit to do all their stuff, their piloting of the craft as well, with a hatch, and you just depressurize the whole cabin, open the hatch, and go outside, as if it were a sci-fi spaceship with no airlock. That's what it looked like. And so I think there's a general incredulity about that. Can you do that? But then there's a couple of specific things. And one of them was... if you find a live stream, somebody claimed that 10 minutes before Jacob Isaacman actually got out of the hatch and went outside, around that time, there's a fly visible going across the screen. A little black dot going zzz across the screen. Now, I rewatched it, and I watched the 10 minutes before he gets out, and I couldn't see it, but I was watching a live stream after the fact. Could have been altered. So, point is that if the cabin, as you say, Alex, had been depressurized and space had been let in, because that's how it works, scientifically speaking. I'm joking about this. That's not how it works.
I'll put it in layman's terms for you.
How can a fly aerodynamically propel itself across a zero G? Vacuum.
It propelling itself. I feel there's a million questions before that. How did it get there in the first place? How is it alive?
Who's to say a fly can't survive the G forces if a human can on takeoff? Why can't a fly?
It wouldn't actually surprise me if NASA has sent a few like flies up to.
Yeah, I'm sure there's been some bugs.
They've taken plants up there, haven't they? And maybe insects too.
I might be confusing it with that bit in The Simpsons where they take ants into space. I mean, going back to what you said earlier, Robin, about like people confuse it, like, or thinking that, oh, this is very sci-fi, like they're just opening the door into space. It's kind of makes me a bit sad because that's like a really rudimentary form of like EVAs that they used to do like in the Mercury missions or like the old Soyuz crafts. Yeah. This was how we first ever did EVAs, like EVAs.
That's a good point. Like, yeah, it was just a small hatch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there was no airlock.
Was super advanced compared to this. This is like the simplest way of doing it, I think. I mean, it's really kind of, it's not as simple as depressurizing it and just opening the door. I think they had to go through some processes where they were slowly lowering the pressure beforehand and in a certain way so that their blood oxygen nitrate or something was a certain kind of composition so they didn't like pass out or from the pressure or something.
It's like going when you do a deep dive to the bottom of the ocean and you come back up, you have to do it in stages to stop your stop the pressure inside you basically blowing you up.
That makes sense. But yeah, I mean, It's, I think it's just one of those things where it's incredible footage. It really is. But it's one of those things where it's like the most incredible footage you see always looks fake, doesn't it? It always looks yeah. like CGI or something, or not quite.
Yeah, how can it be real? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm.
Well, yeah, they didn't help themselves. Sorry, Martin, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, yeah, I was going to move on to what some of the issues were, potential issues were with the footage.
I'll go for it, yeah.
No, you go for it. You were on the right, on the track anyway. Go for it.
That's kind of you. I was just going to say, because I watched it, this struck me, and it made me laugh, actually. Because you know we've had some experience in the media world and how to present something, and one thing you don't do when you're doing a live stream is time your EVA in space to coincide with when the spaceship crosses the horizon and you go onto the dark side of the Earth, so that there's no as Isaacman got out, we had a wonderful, beautiful 30 seconds, maybe a minute of him with Earth in the background behind him. It was gorgeous, beautiful to see the Earth from that distance, and then immediately cross the horizon onto the dark side of the planet, and it was just him with a spotlight mounted on the spacecraft shining on him. And because of the spotlight, the camera doesn't pick up anything in the background, because the strongest light source, which is the spotlight, drowns out all other light sources. So it was just him against a black backdrop. Just some guy, yeah. Half a man in a spacesuit. He was actually half in the spacecraft against a black backdrop, which obviously I thought, well, firstly, that's bad TV. And secondly, no wonder people are thinking this is fake.
We're so spoiled for choice in TV nowadays. You're literally seeing a man further away from Earth than humans have been in like the last 50 years. And you're like, yeah. What's what else is great?
I think
but you're not wrong. yeah, you're not wrong though, Robin. Like I do agree. They couldn't have timed it a little bit better to get a little bit more. I mean, I guess it takes what, like I think it's 90 minutes for the ISS to orbit mm-hmm. the Earth. So I'm guessing it was pretty quick. But this should have taken them a bit longer if they were further away, as they were. They were at a higher mm-hmm. altitude, weren't they?
Orbit. That's a good point. I forgot to mention that it has also marked history by being what the furthest people have ever been in orbit, is that right?
Since 1966, I think.
Right.
The Gemini 11, which was the furthest humans have been from Earth since the Apollo missions.
Sobering thought.
Yes.
Yeah, so crazy. So 1,400 kilometers above the Earth, and I think so 870 miles up they were.
I mean, that's just
what was their specific goal, Isaacman? is that actually known, or is it just to?
It was just to do this, so, right? Think, yeah,
just for fun.
Well, they were doing some tests and some experiments. They were studying space radiation effects.
Okay,
because they were kind of orbiting through portions of the Van Allen radiation belts. So they were conducting research to better understand the effects of space radiation on human health.
Okay.
They were testing their Starlink communications, as we've mentioned, and they were doing 36 scientific experiments on medical research in space flight, on human health in space flight. So they were doing an ultrasound to monitor for decompression sickness.
Okay, so they were the test subjects.
Yeah, so that's it. I think when unless you have like a actual scientist going up to do specific experiments, NASA and other entities tend to just make the people going up
who are there. Guinea pigs.
Use them as research specimens while they're there.
But really, it was just a jolly. It was SpaceX showing off and saying, "Look what we can do," and these rich people on board saying, I'm now the first to do this.
Who's a
private citizen.
And it was Jared Isaacman, wasn't it, who was actually funding the mission, because he's a billionaire who, I think, how did he make his money? It was through some kind of credit card thing, Swift or something.
Something like that. It kind of, to be honest, I kind of went in my head and went out again, because I must ask you both after this, and please continue saying what you're saying, Alex, but I'm not particularly charmed by who went into space. Let's say that.
Sure, sure. But what I will say is, before, because this will be mentioned in the comments, and I just want to say, the first mission that, because this is the second mission that he went on, they were also raising money for a children's hospital, St. Jude's, or a children's charity.
Okay.
And the first mission raised over $200 million wow. for St. Jude's Children's oh. Research Hospital.
Wow.
And so, I mean, like, at the same time, they're doing something really cool and raising loads of money for charity. Sure, they could have just donated that money themselves to begin with.
Yeah. But like, yes. Yeah.
Do you know what? There's so many worse things that a billionaire could be doing.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, if I may go down that track a little bit, it does annoy me when billionaires do that. Rich people in general, just like, I'm spending all this money on doing something that is pleasurable to me, and then all you ordinary people without much money can spend your hard-earned cash helping other people by donating to this charity. And just like, why don't you just stop spending money on yourself to do this jolly, and just give the money to charity? But never mind, never mind.
I was like, I'm doing a sponsored filmathon. I'm going to watch all my favorite movies back to back.
Yeah. I think of that 200 million, he did donate 100 million of it. So just,
okay, take it back.
I'll say that as well.
Well, that leads nicely onto the question. And we'll come back around to whether you think it was faked. But if this happened and it is the first spacewalk by a commercial passenger, essentially, and people, as the news is spinning it and celebrating it as, oh, look, it marks a new frontier in space exploration, are you excited by that?
Am I excited?
It's difficult to get excited when it's not going to affect me in the slightest. It's like, oh, private people are going into space. Yeah, but I'm not. It's not exactly open for us, is it? It's open for business, for billionaires.
Wasn't there, there's the most number of astronauts in space at one time when they were out there, right? It was like 19 or 20. Yeah.
Right.
I think there's nearly 30 now, because they recently launched a new Soyuz mission to the ISS. So I think with those two astronauts that are currently stuck in space to the
end. Oh yeah.
You count. You're part of, congratulations, you're in the Guinness World Record book.
Plus there's a relatively new Chinese space station that they've made, and they've got some Taikonauts, I think they call them, on board. So I think we currently, or as yesterday, had the most number of astronauts in space.
Wow.
Or humans, people in space, you should say.
It happens fast, right? It ramps up. You know, we've waited a lot, many decades, and now suddenly it's going to ramp up massively, and there'll be 50 people in space, 100 people in space, and then suddenly there's a million people in space right now. I'm just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You look up at the sky, it's just people. That's quite exciting, I guess. If you're, you know, an advocate for space exploration, it's just kind of the scales increasing and all sorts of different actors are getting involved. Like if you're looking for kind of, you know, what's next in that frontier, it can only be a good thing that, you know, kind of private entities are out there, that different space what they're called, governing bodies. In space programs.
Organizations. Programs,
are funding it and are interested. Of course, there's always the argument for what else could we be doing with that money? But if you're someone that's excited about space exploration, then it's got to be a good thing overall. But this in particular, is this exciting? Two billionaires have gone into space.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
There are also two not billionaires as part of the mission. One of them were both of them SpaceX employees.
They were trained though, weren't they? That was the big difference.
All four of them had like extensive training to carry out this mission.
Which is the other thing that about it. I'm like, what's the definition here? It's kind of, so they landed yesterday, didn't they? Or this morning. At the time of recording.
This morning at the time of recording,
And so it was a 5-day mission, and most of the news is referring to the four astronauts made a landing in the Gulf of Mexico. And it made me think, just by virtue of going into space, this private citizen who paid for the privilege of going out there becomes an astronaut. And that makes sense. That's fine. But then I thought, why were they being considered a private citizen in the first place? Because as you said, Alex, they had training before they went on the mission, because SpaceX is not going to send people without some training up there, because But like if you go scuba diving, well, here's a good point, good comparison perhaps. If you want to go scuba diving, you need to get training and a license. You know?
Yes.
Yeah. At least in this country.
Yeah, it's true.
And I'm like, well, when do you cease to be a private citizen on a spacecraft and become an astronaut if you need to have training to go into space in the first place?
Is it the difference between being a skydiver and being a skydiving instructor? You need some training, but you're not
like. Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe just the media conflating the two things, and I don't know, just calling them astronauts. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's the astronaut is a profession. So yeah, they're not astronauts.
Right, the astronauts are being paid by a space agency, whereas these people are paying to go up there.
Yeah, you're taking your own blood pressure at home. You're not a doctor.
It's just something that we need to update as a a language, I guess, because up until now, pretty much, if you're an astronaut, it's a job profession and it means you've been into space. Mm. Whereas now we're in the funny situation where people where it's not your profession are going into space. So are they astronauts?
That's a good question.
So.
Mm.
I mean, I think that has been the problem for the last like couple of decades.
What would you call it?
Spaceman.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is just going to become like you just say astronaut for anyone who's been in space. I think that's going to win out over the job front.
I guess there won't be that many still, will there?
I think you'll just have more specific job roles within space. So you'll be like he's the command, like mission commander and mission specialist or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like they will stop being the profession and start being the title of someone who's been into space.
Right. I guess
and
even
probably going to win out.
I mean, way back when, you know, like on unfortunately the Challenger disaster, right? There was the teacher on board, wasn't there? The female teacher.
Yeah.
But she trained as an astronaut for however many years, right? Like it was part of it. It was like she's a teacher, became a trained astronaut, then went up to space.
She got a lot of NASA training, before going on the mission.
Where's that line, I guess?
That's a really good question. I think we're going to have to come up with a better term soon. I feel like I'm uncomfortable with this idea because you'll reach the point where there'll be like jumbo jets, all the equivalent, going to the moon, you know, where you've got hundreds of people on this big vehicle, none of whom have had training. All they've had is the pre-flight instruction video saying put your head under the seat if we're crashing or whatever, but they're not going to be astronauts, right? And they probably shouldn't be considered astronauts even if they have traveled through space. It's an interesting question.
Space travelers
that's probably actually quite good. It's a couple of people just going out for the trip. Space. Ooh, I'm a spacefarer.
Spaceman came down to answer some things.
But I mean, clearly, if you think that there's going to be jumbo jets on the moon, Robin, surely you are not saying that you don't believe that the Polaris Dawn mission was real.
I don't think it was faked. I think it was real. I think it was a real live stream. I think it was a bad live stream, quite amateurishly done, I would say. Lots of cutting away to like a screensaver saying, the next camera will be connecting soon. And I think...
But, I mean, compared convenient. To what, though? This is so like... there's no equivalent. Show me a different company's better live stream of them hundreds of miles outside the atmosphere.
Just look at the moon landings, right? If you want to do...
I mean, we've had rockier live streams than this, if I'm being honest.
Oh, we have, but we're three guys in our living rooms. Come on. This is a multi-billion dollar business. And I'd say, just look at all the NASA Apollo missions. They had better live streams than this.
What? No, they didn't.
Yeah, the quality was poor, but the angles were better. And there was cooler stuff.
They had a better script as well.
Yeah, one small step for man. That's a much better script than what we had here, which was...
Yeah.
Well, what we had was, we had him unlocking the hatch, and then suddenly someone over the broadcast saying, don't go out, hold off, don't do it yet. And then like, whoop. And then he did it. And it's like, go up now. And then he climbs up, and then there was nothing. No great profound words. So yes. I think I think it was real, but I can absolutely get why people think it was fake, and I for a specific reason, not just because it wasn't the most spectacular thing to see, and we've seen it before done for fake. Like now, for example, that backdrop of the Earth in the kind of, what do you call it, like the crescent of the Earth before they cross the horizon. You've got those big things that, you know, the Star Wars movies use them, those giant LED volumes where they project a pre-rendered CGI graphic of them traveling through space on, so the light interacts with the actors' faces. Whereas it used to be a blue screen, now it's literally there in camera. So right, yeah. I could believe people thinking, oh, they just did that. But particularly because of the SpaceX designs, I don't know if you think this, but I think it's very cool what they've done. But you look at the spacesuits they've got, they're really sleek and quite form-fitting. They're very cool, kind of sci-fi looking helmets.
Yeah. It looks like a sci-fi movie. They make it look so much like a sci-fi movie. You're like, it just looks like a film.
And if you look in the cabin, you've got those flat screens which look like they might be touch screens. And you've got the lighting is actually that kind of really cool circular LED lighting in the ceiling, kind of hidden. It's hard for me to describe, but it looks like the kind of stuff you saw on Star Trek The Next Generation, you know, three decades ago. And it looks great, but at the same time, like, yeah, it looks like a movie set. So no wonder people are primed to think, yeah, this isn't real. Anyway, what do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's actually crazy going through the comments, because I was browsing TikTok and I saw this pop up. And going through the comments on that, it's kind of sad, because like all of the comments are saying, It's faked. But that was the common one that I saw. It's like, oh, so you can just wear a biker helmet and a leather jacket in space now. I think that's what people have a hard time believing, because it's all they've kind of known is the bulky like suits that they wear when they're doing like on moon landings and traveling around the ISS out exterior. Of course, those are completely different suits with completely different needs and pressurization. You know, these are actually, there's a lot that these suits can't do that those suits can do. And they were specifically testing the mobility of them. And they actually looked quite robotic in some instances on this live stream. I guess because the pressurization of the suit, I was just imagining it was kind of blowing them up like there's just air under the suits and they couldn't really move much. That's what it kind of looked like.
No, it's true.
But
in terms of some of the complaints, people were talking a lot about the astronaut's left arm, weren't they, when he came out. Like, I mean, people just throw out comments, don't they, that then pick up traction. But look at his left arm, that looks well fake. That's the extent of kind of the argument against it being real. But I think it's also that we're in an era of deep fakes, of AI generated stuff. It's like it's become probably easier than ever before to fake stuff. And then combined with the fact that, you know, anything Elon Musk related, SpaceX related, you only have to look at Elon Musk's Twitter timeline to see that the truth, the fact that he, you know, thinks that X is a bastion of truth and honesty is an absolute joke. So you combine those together, people are very skeptical about him, you know, telling the truth, quite frankly. Yeah, so I think SpaceX related maybe has a bit of a tinge to it of, oh, you know, whatever he says, you know, might as well be bullshit.
Yeah.
Here's what I never understand though with the like the private, like I kind of get the whole NASA faking the moon landing as a conspiracy theory, because it's kind of like they had to get there by the end of the decade, so they like for political reasons they faked it so that they could beat the Soviet Union, and I kind of get that as a motive type thing. I don't believe it, but I kind of get it. SpaceX is a private company. Jared Isaacman paid them to send him in a rocket to space. Imagine if they turned around to him and said, and here it is, space, and it's just a green screen. he'd be pissed off.
I wouldn't know. Isaacman.
I'm not paying for that. I paid for a rocket ship.
No, Isaacman has been paid, Alex. You're getting this the wrong way around. Isaacman has been paid to appear as, you know, this billionaire who's been to space.
Who's paying him?
SpaceX are paying him, because if he says that he's been to space, a successful space mission with private equity increases the stock price.
But who's paying SpaceX? They're a company.
What's their business model?
How many shares
does he have in SpaceX, Alex? You know, he's exactly. They're like, you participate.
The money just goes round in a circle.
Yeah.
But then,
rockets get launched and money goes round.
Exactly. Your stock price increases, and those at the top would just become richer. That's the idea.
That's all that matters. Yeah. All that
keep the money going round.
Just like the episode, it was always sunny. Just keep it coming. Just what's it with the Paddy's tokens?
The Paddy's dollars, yeah.
Yeah, Paddy's dollars. Yeah.
So we sounds like we've landed on the side that we all think it was real, but we understand or are sympathetic to people who might think it's fake.
I think so. The fact that they're not astronauts as well. Right? I'm not sympathetic, but the fact that they're not astronauts as well. So anyone can go into space wearing anything.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not. It actually kind of makes me sad that like people are doing this kind of thing, and it's, I don't know. I take a keen interest in the space industry, and I think it's a really exciting time right now. And it's kind of sad seeing comments that are just like so kind of I don't know, like have no understanding of like what is happening here. Like it's like, oh, you could just wear a biker helmet in space. It's not a biker helmet, though, is it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. But I mean, I think people, like you said, Martin, before we started recording, you were surprised how little news attention this got beforehand. This kind of came out of nowhere. I think that's maybe why it just wasn't very publicized, possibly. So people are like surprised that this just happened.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's part of it. Yeah, it's good. To me, it feels, I mean, I'm sure you're all over Alex being a space enthusiast, but to me, there wasn't much mainstream news on it until after it happened, which I can understand it in a way. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, but it's only over the last few days that I personally had heard anything about it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, all the things we've said already, we're right. You know, the fact that that when he's climbing out, it looks just like he's like, I don't know. It looks a little bit like, see, you know, it was, you know, like one of those cop shows where they're getting out of a car after they've been like, arrested. There's just a spotlight on them.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's a little bit like that. So.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that the people who want to believe that it's fake have come out and said it's fake, but they also don't have much evidence because it's just like, it's all like, I'm not going to lie, but it looks well fake. You know, that's the extent of where we're getting at here. So it's not much to go on.
Yeah.
No, I think maybe if they'd also done something a bit more exciting. So it's significant, but the level of significance is nerdy, if that makes sense. And I've got no problem with that. I'm a nerd. But, you know, you go to someone in the street and you say, oh, we've landed on the moon. And people are like, oh, yeah, I get that. And you go to someone in the street and say, oh, a billionaire did a spacewalk and he's like the 50th person to do one. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
People are going to be less enthused by that.
Yeah, and people will be like, "Well, hold on a second. I thought Elon Musk said we're going to Mars. What happened to that?"
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the Martian?
I thought it'd be better than this. Yeah.
Where's the moon base? Yeah. You're right. It is kind of sad that we live in such a skeptical world, but that's. I mean, we're benefiting from the internet. Obviously, we've got a podcast online which you can listen to wherever you are, but. The internet has changed things, as the Joker would say.
Mm.
And we, nothing can be believed anymore thanks to AI and deep fakery, which leads me on nicely, actually, just to round off this discussion. This podcast is fake. We are all AI. This has been harvested from years of podcast recordings. And we're adding in this message now as a pre-scripted disclaimer put into ChatGPT and polished up by Descaler. Descaler? I don't know.
Do you think in a few years' time that we could do that? Just like upload all of our episodes to ChatGPT and say, can you make a new episode for us? And then it would just...
I'd love to see that. Yeah.
Well, YouTube has that box to tick, doesn't it? It says like...
We do, yeah.
It's not faked or auto-generated.
We do. We have to tell YouTube now. We declare.
God, so every what is this world we're living in? So Where's my rocket ship? This is all getting a bit too much.
I'm glad you brought that up, Martin, because that's the guarantee. This podcast goes up on YouTube and in video format, and it goes, the same version goes out to all our audio listeners. And because of that disclaimer, we have to tell and confirm with YouTube that we are not AI. So there you go. That proves it.
Indeed.
Proves it. Thanks, fellas, for that discussion. I thought that was really, really interesting. Hopefully people can get excited for this. I'm struggling to get excited for it because I want Mars now. I want the moon base now. I don't want another spacewalk for a billionaire. But that's me. That's me being all bitter.
Well, yeah, I guess like what have we got coming up? We've got Artemis 3 or Artemis 2. Artemis 3 is coming up next year. And I think before the end of the year, there should be another launch of a Starship, which... Starship. Is Elon Musk's big project, his big boy, his phallic space piece, which is far bigger than his competitors. So,
he wins.
He wins. He's got the biggest rocket.
Yeah. All right, then. Well, on that note, fellas, are there any comments from our previous episodes that you'd like to draw attention to, respond to?
Yes, but I have gone off the tab, so someone else go first.
Oh, okay.
I've got a comment from Jared Weldon, 1974, and this was on our last podcast, and this made me a bit sad because he said, just saw that Jack Carlson passed away. I hope you guys are all right. And this is a bit belated now, so I suppose we should have maybe said something, but one of our usual quiz buzzers that I often go for. It's the succulent Chinese meal man, who has a spot on our backdrop. Jared Wilson says, may democracy continue to be manifest through succulent Chinese meals.
Indeed.
I'd just like to echo that. Yeah.
Someone should be doing it.
Jack Carlson.
I mean, they're dropping like flies. Someone should really keep an eye on Delia because... quite frankly, Orson Welles has gone a few years back.
That's true.
Yeah.
Jack Carlson, Delia. I mean, come on. God bless her soul.
She's the only one left. Tim Curry, too. I mean, he's not in a great state. He would,
is he not?
Well, he had a stroke years ago. He's like wheelchair bound and everything. I think he's still acting, though, when he can.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah.
It's a race to the bottom.
Indeed.
Do you have a comment, Martin? Did you find it?
And that was, in fact, the one that I was going to mention too.
Oh, sorry, Martin.
Which, no, it's not a problem.
Glad to see it impacted all of us.
Yes.
It affected us all.
Yeah.
That news, yeah.
So here's one from Case Closed. It says, as an American military veteran and gun owner, I'd like to... So this was basically on when we spoke about, just a bit of context, we spoke about which Olympic sports we think we could do without having any experience. And that the article said, wasn't like 15% of people thought they could become a 100-meter sprinter or something stupid? Ridiculous. Anyway, as an American military veteran and gun owner, I'd like to say I could win an Olympic medal in shooting if I practice more, but I see how impressive the actual shooters are and I don't know. Either way, that would be an Olympic sport I could do. I certainly couldn't handle the regular athletics. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's got to be something like shooting or archery. But even then, you've got to be like, you've got to have that incredible natural ability for that. You can't just be good at it. You get to a certain stage.
Yeah. And then
regardless of being good or not, I think I'd definitely choose shooting now. Just because of the memes that came out of the Paris Olympics with the shooting. I just wear some ridiculous James Bond evil outfit and then absolutely fall on my face and be terrible at shooting. But I think the memes would just be great from it. Either that or breakdancing, obviously.
I was about to say, breakdancing. Yeah, now, exactly. I have hope now that I could do the breakdancing.
You just have to grow a really twirled moustache for the shooting, wouldn't you? With a long pistol.
Exactly, yeah.
The thing about the breakdancing is I didn't watch it, obviously. I'm not that interested in the breakdancing, but somebody sent me a clip of the Australian breakdancer with no comment, no context. They just sent me a clip and I hadn't watched any of the breakdancing. And I watched it and I thought, yeah, she's pretty good. And I said, yeah, she's good. And they replied saying, no, that's not the point. I was like, oh, okay, sorry. Whoops.
But it's kind of like that when you watch some Olympic, like when you watch like the synchronized divings one for me, where you watch it and it's like, that is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And the judges are like, oh, they won't be happy. They came all the way here to do that. They won't be happy.
Then the mad thing is that within a week, you're like, oh, no. They over-rotated. The extension on the arms wasn't good.
Yeah.
You watch a couple of hours, then you're an expert. Yeah.
Terrible. 4 out of 10.
I mean, I hate to end on a bit of a bummer note, but I have a comment I'd like to respond to from Zake94, spelled with an X, not sure how you say it. On our channel comment to let people know that we uploaded our latest Uncovered video on our second channel, Uncovered, about the origins of fingerprinting and the first crimes solved by fingerprints. So go ahead and watch it if you're interested in that kind of thing. And Zake says, I hope you guys know it's not interesting anymore. It sucks. It was better when you had 20 minutes, well-researched videos about the topic. Try to do more of that. And of course, pay attention to that. So firstly, thank you for your feedback, Zake. Always grateful to have some
Robin,
feedback.
Robin, this is the last thing on the podcast.
I know, I should have led with this.
We're ending the episode after this. Yeah. There's nothing else after this.
I just want to let Zake know that if you made it to the end of this episode, and very grateful that you did, Zake, thank you for your feedback. It really does mean a lot. People, please keep the feedback coming. As on a personal note, firstly, we never made 20-minute videos. They're always between 10 and 20 minutes, normally about 15 at most. So check your facts. And the second thing is, that was well-researched. I read quite a few books for that video. Feel free to correct me on any mistakes I made about the history of fingerprints, but let me know where you read about it. So there you go. Thank you, Zake.
That was also he was commenting on something that was in a more traditional, you know.
A little video essay about history. We started with a kind of jokey little me recording an excerpt from Sherlock Holmes. So maybe that put him off because the tone wasn't quite right. In which case, sorry.
I don't think he even watched it. That's what I think.
It's fate, mate.
That's a shame because I think everyone should go over and watch it because it's a great video you made, Robin.
Oh, so thank you. That's
don't
very
listen
kind.
To the haters. Just me. Just shake it off, Robin.
Yeah.
Shake it off.
Shake it off.
Exactly.
No, it's all right. Well, anyway, thank you for listening to this episode. Please do share your thoughts, particularly on the Polaris Dawn mission, in every aspect, whether you think it's fake, whether you think it's not fake, whether you think conspiracy theories will just always plague space travel now, or what you think about the future of space travel and the significance of the Polaris Dawn spacewalk for it. Please do let us know in the comments below on YouTube or on our Twitter feed at JInterestingYT. If you don't want to go on Twitter, that's understandable. Whatever platform you can contact us on, please do let us know your thoughts. Give us a review, give us a like, share, whatever. Thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you so much for your support to all of our Patreon supporters of any tier and all of our YouTube members of any tier. Thank you so much. And I guess we'll see you next time.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.